This is an interview with Ray Canine, who served with the Company 120th Regiment, 30th Infantry Division during World War II. This interview is being conducted at the Mount Horeb Public Library at the following address, 105 Perimeter Road, Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, on the following date, August 24th, 2008, and the interviewer is Jessica Williams.
I lived on the farm and went to rural school, Irby School, rural 8 grades, and then went to Mount Horeb High School, okay. Graduated from there, mm-hmm. and went to the service. There were four of us, mm-hmm. and my mother died when I was about 3 years old, so I had an aunt come and take care of me from my childhood up. Yes, I was drafted because at that time they stopped enlistments. You couldn't enlist. You had to report to your draft board and get in line as they took you as your numbers came up. So there was no enlistments, but so basically I was drafted, mm-hmm. but we enlisted in order to get drafted. Okay. Well, from the time I left Mount Horeb, I went to Milwaukee, and after a couple of days down there, they shipped me down to Camp Landing in Florida, mm-hmm. and I spent 16 weeks in training down there, mm-hmm. infantry training, and then we came back home for a couple of weeks off, and then I went to Camp Kilmer in New York and was shipped overseas.
So what was basic training like?
Well, when we left here, it was in February, cold, and we got down, Camp Lanning was so hot that the first couple of days just let us sit alongside the buildings to get ourselves adjusted to it. Mm-hmm. But got you up early in the morning and kept you going, mm-hmm. and it was tough but good. Mm-hmm. It was nothing unbearable. Mm-hmm. The highlight was, of course, the 25-mile hike. Full pack. That was at the graduation at the time. You were willing to make it because you wanted to get out of camp, uh-huh. do something different. But it was all right.
How much time did you have to do the 25-mile hike?
I just can't really tell you. It was pretty grueling, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they stayed right on you. I just don't remember how long it took.
Did you camp out?
No, we made it. You were in pretty good physical shape after 16 weeks of training. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something you couldn't do. Mm-hmm. You could do it if you were physically fit. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of the highlight of the training. At the end, you knew you were going to walk 25 miles mm-hmm. with full pack on, carrying a gun and a steel helmet on your head.
Goodness.
But that was kind of the highlight of the training, anyhow.
Uh-huh. So you looked forward to it.
Yes, we look forward to it and getting out of camp and doing something.
So after you finished basic training, did they assign you to a unit?
At that time, no, they didn't assign me to a unit. I went out to Camp Kilmer, and I was put on a ship. And I can't tell you the name of the ship, but there weren't too many men on the ship, but another man who was on from Mount Horeb here was on the ship with me. And we figured out that every hall we had a couple guys standing at it. 24 hours a day, and we found out we're watching for fire because it was a ship loaded with ammunition. And because we were replacements going over, we weren't assigned to anybody, so they used us as fire guard over going over. And I think we were on the water about 2 weeks, mm-hmm. but the ship was mostly had ammunition on it rather than men. And it was kind of interesting. We went to the port of Glasgow in England. And as you come into the port, there was two ships right there in the front of the port, and we went right up to them. Next thing you know, they just kind of pulled back, and we slid through. And then they told us that they had a dragnet there for submarines couldn't get into the harbor, and these two ships let us in and out.
Okay.
And as we went by, that's when I first saw the first black market started. The British boys were asking for American cigarettes, and they were selling them right off the ship as the two ships slid by each other.
Huh.
That was black market right off the bat.
That's
and then we got to Glasgow and then went down the southern part of the, England. Mm-hmm. And it was shipped over to France from there.
Okay. So you were fighting in France?
Yes.
Okay.
I went into combat at St. Lô. I was at these... D-Day was what, December, oh boy.
Was it June 6th?
June 6th.
Yeah.
And I never got into combat till August, about 10th of August.
Oh.
So we were in probably 20 miles. St. Louis, probably 20 miles. Uh-huh. And it came as quite a surprise that France had a lot of hedgerows. Hedgerows were piles of rocks. Instead of having fences, they had hedgerows. And they were about 5 feet tall and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the Americans had a hard time fighting there because our tanks couldn't go over them. Mm-hmm. So we had to take each little patch of ground. We had to fight for the guy on the other side of the hedgerow, who was a German. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have a chance to open up and just go like we wanted to go. So it was the hedgerow fighting day by day. And we didn't make much ground, but we did get out of there and got on the plains of France to head toward Berlin. So mm-hmm. once we got out of the hedgerow countries, and it was a very slow going. Of course, while we were there, the Americans were building up in back of us. Mm-hmm. They had to put in supply lines and gas lines and everything else. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a dull after they got onto the French soil. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was very well organized. I myself was a runner, and one of my main jobs was at night, if we were in combat, at night they sent out the password, and it would never come up till just about dusk, and it was my job to take the password out to the first platoon captain officer, who was a lieutenant, and that went on every night when you're in a combat zone. Otherwise, during the day, I had to be close to my captain. If he wanted to talk to the first lieutenant of the first platoon, I had to know where the captain lieutenant was all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'd go get him. Mm-hmm. And as runners, we usually ran in pairs because if something happened to me, they wanted to know what happened. They wanted a guy to help them there and stuff, so mm-hmm. we ran in pairs. They had a lot of radios, but half the time the batteries didn't work or they didn't have batteries. Mm-hmm. So it was mouth to mouth rather than radio to radio. We didn't. And oftentimes during the day, I'd have to go get the lieutenant and have him come back to the captain. Mm-hmm. The captain had about 5 lieutenants under his command, and the lieutenants came back to him rather than him go to the captains, and that's why he had to stay in one position so he knew where all his men were. Mm-hmm. And then food we brought up. When we weren't in big combat, food we brought up. It was my job to take the carriers out, the men carrying the food out to the men. So it'll be distributed every day and stuff.
How did you happen to get the job of the runner?
When I was a replacement, I was lined up with about 6-7 other guys, and the first sergeant comes out with a little pad, mm-hmm. and he needed a runner, and I was in line. He says, "Kanine, you're a runner." I didn't know what it meant, hardly. He says, "You go over in that group over there." So I went over there, and then the next guy, he said, "Well, I need a machine gunner in this squad, so you go over there, and I need a rifleman there, and you go over there." And we're assigned to our unit. We're all in the same unit, but mm-hmm. we got our jobs done. Mm-hmm. Now, I could have been a light machine gunner, or a mortar man, or it could have been an infantry rifleman, but they were looking for a runner, mm-hmm. and I got the runner's job.
In the book that you gave me to read, you said that you were pretty close to the captain then.
I was with him all the time. And then when I got wounded and went back to England, I came back to Germany again. Uh-huh. And I went right back to my same company. Uh-huh. And I thought, now I'll get another job. But Captain Shaw saw me and he said, "Ray, I still need you as my runner." So mm-hmm. I got my runner's job back again. Mm-hmm. After all that time, they still recognized you as to having a position. And, mm-hmm. giving your job back.
So what was your captain's name?
Captain Shaw.
Okay.
He came out of Florida, as far as I know. He died just recently. He was quite a bit older than I was. Mm-hmm. But he was a real gentleman, real fine man.
Mm-hmm. So you kept in touch with him then after the war?
Yes, a little bit. He's in the pictures I got of him there. He's in the pictures. And at night, it was my job, too, to see to it that he was comfortable. During the day, he was always busy. At night, we had to find a place to sleep. Mm-hmm. It was my job to find a barn somewhere that had straw in it, something that was where he could, where he'd stay and make his captain's headquarters. I and the other runners, too, there'd be about 6 runners there. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't alone and everything, but that was our job to find a place where the captain would be safe, too. We had to make sure that nobody could just walk in on him. Mm-hmm. He had his first lieutenant with him too, and mm-hmm. a couple other men. Mm-hmm. But it was our job to find a place that would be safe and dry and mm-hmm. as much as it could be.
So basically it was your job to look out for him for
That's right.
how many years did you do that?
Well, just through the war. From time I August until the following year.
So you would get kind of close with him. Tell me about the battle that you were wounded in. How did that transpire?
Well, we had lined up going into Germany, and I don't think I got into Germany over 300 or 400 yards mm-hmm. when the Germans were firing tank guns, airburst in the air. We're in the woods, mm-hmm. and these airbursts came, and they caught me out of my foxhole, more or less, and mm-hmm. I got hit with airburst.
So was that shrapnel?
That's shrapnel. Okay. The shell busts about, maybe 10, 15 feet above you, and then the shrapnel flies all over and hits whoever around there. So. Mm-hmm. And it depended upon where you got hit. Shrapnel was in your body somewhere. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like a direct rifle shot that, that hit you. It was hot metal that was hitting you. Mm-hmm.
So did it hit you just all over?
Yeah. Well, it hit me in three different places. Mm-hmm. But it probably isn't as life-threatening as a rifle fire would be. Because if somebody puts you in the sights of a rifle, your chances aren't too good. Where it just airburst with hot shrapnel, mm-hmm. you're just going to get it in the arm and the leg and... Which I did too. I got it in the back, and I got it in the head, and I got it in the leg. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, I've still got it. They I got back to a field hospital, and they operated on me and took it out. But when I came back here to the VA in Madison, they took x-rays and said, no, they didn't get it all. So I had the option then of leaving it or having them go and get it. Mm-hmm. And I optioned to let it enter, being I was home already, and it wasn't bothering me. Mm-hmm.
Has it ever bothered you?
No. Uh-uh. Huh. It's in there. They told me at the time the muscles will grow right over it. Huh. Wow. But it's there, but the muscle grows right over it.
Hmm. Did you black out after you were hit, or do you remember what happened?
Yes. When I knew I was hit, because it was, you picked up something hot, you're going to know it's hit. Mm-hmm. And they had... pill boxes where they had guns firing out. They were German pill boxes, but we were in charge of them again. So I went to the nearest pill box and got in where the Americans were. Some of the soldiers were there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who gave the authority or how it worked. They said, Kaneen, you got to go back. So they took my gun away from me and my ammunition away from me. And they took me down a hill to where a Red Cross Jeep was waiting for the wounded and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I got on a Jeep, and they took me back to where they had a field tent set up. And from there on, that field hospital then decided to take out what they could. Mm-hmm. They thought to them. Then they put me on a plane and flew me to England to recuperate. I was over in England probably 2 months or so. They have a kind of a sneaky way of doing it. They put you in a tent, and they put you in a bed, and you have to stay there and they feel you want to get up. And of course, out and back, there was an open tent, but those guys got to go and pass in the town. Mm-hmm. But if you're in bed, you couldn't. Mm-hmm. So you felt good enough, you wanted to get in that tent, and you got back out there, and then a week or so, you're out training, and pretty soon you're on a train going back to Europe again. But you were all right, you were feeling good. Uh-huh. One of the funny incidents was, I came in on this hospital train, and it was a train with no seats, and just hammocks with a wounded on it. Mm-hmm. And we pulled into this train depot at night, about midnight. Here all these army guys were, and I thought, my God, what have you got all these guys out back here for? Well, I didn't realize they were all patients. Oh. We give up. There were guys getting well, see, uh-huh. and they hooked and load. Uh-huh. And then they, and because they're up like that, late night like that, you had the mess hall open, give them coffee and Coronas and stuff. And the guys were looking to see if they could find guys in their outfits too. Mm-hmm.
So they were the ones that were
getting well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were guys well. They just went down to help unload the troop train. And but maybe 2 months later, I was helping to unload the troop train. But it all, they had a series of, they had a way, a series of doing it, and everything worked. And of course, it's all, like unload that troop train, it's all totally dark, you know, you couldn't, there was no lights, dark out, you know, they didn't want to be bombed at night and stuff.
Right.
So you're working in the dark all the time. So, but then going back, I went right back to my same outfit again.
In the book, you mentioned right before a battle, you and another guy were laying down alongside the road. And
yes, my classmate, Jack Holm, from town here, we met in France. And either up, we were going, I kind of think the battalion was going through us because we were the, or we were going through, and anyhow, we recognized each other. One of us laying in the ditch there, and the other guy was walking by, and we just said hi to each other. And then we thought, gee, we didn't even find out where we were. And then a couple of days later, I had happened to go back to our battalion. That's where the colonel would be, related to our captain. I probably went, the captain probably had to go back to see the colonel. And I went with him, and there was my friend Jack Holm. So we, then we knew where each other was. So we knew then where, then we stayed in touch until he got killed. Well, we were crossing the Rhine River at a town called Goddard's Nickerham, I think that's the way I pronounced it, and I got across the Rhine okay, and he got across the Rhine okay, but he got, he was, according to his friends, he was supposed to be down in the cellar, and he was out in the hallway, the doorway, and a nerve burst came in, and he got killed by shrapnel, too. Now, I wasn't, I don't really know how close I was to him, but they got word to me right away that he'd been killed. And so there was not much I could do but go back, but keep going forward. So, and he was shipped home and buried out here in the Mount Herb Union Cemetery. It wasn't supposed to happen to him, but it just, those are things that happen.
You have another part in there highlighted where a friend of yours could speak. He was German?
Yes.
And so that's how you were able to tell that the people advancing on you at nighttime?
We were at a roadblock, and wherever two roads come together, why they, at night we'd set up machine guns that would cross fire. Because it's pitch dark, you got to know where your fire is. Anyhow, we just more than got settled down at the roadblock, and it's pitch dark and everything. And Larry Ellenberg, who was from New York, him and I were friends, and he could speak three or four different languages, especially New German. And we could hear these horses coming, because you could hear their harnesses jingling at night. And that's how they used to pull their guns around. They'd hitch horses to these carts and pull their guns. And Larry said to me, he says, Ray, that's not French, that's German. And he didn't say German, he said, that's Krauts. And boy, all of a sudden, somebody realized it too, and they opened fire. And all this cross-firing took place, lit it up, you know. They threw hand grenades at them and stuff. Well, the sad part is, there was two sets of horses there, remember, and they got killed. But not after, you know, after making, like a horse would, you know, noise and stuff, confusion, everything else. And that night we had two first sergeants, and the first sergeant was laying alongside me, and I reached over and I caught him and felt him on his heel and recognized, we knew who each other was. And the next morning I found out that he got sent back because he had his heel shot off.
Oh my.
Yeah. So, and that was one of the problems the captain had. He had two first sergeants, and the Army didn't want you to have two of anything. They wanted him to excess one of them. And he liked them both, so he's kind of delaying it. And next morning he said, well, that took care of the problem. And the first sergeant went back.
What do you mean by excess one? Like, well, he somewhere did, else?
Well, Yeah, they wouldn't want an office, a company, to have two first sergeants. There'd be a need for a first sergeant in some other company.
Okay.
So they're excessing back.
Mm-hmm.
Just like if their captain run in had all of a sudden had 10 runners and he only needed six, he'd mm-hmm. have to excess for them and send them back and have them reassigned to some mm-hmm. other outfit. So he had his heel shot off that night. And the next morning, of course, it was quite a mess around at that intersection. Well, sometime during the night, I got the job of guarding one of the prisoners all night long, and they had a white bandage over his head.
Mm-hmm.
And I was new. I said to the officer, whoever brought it up to me, says, "Can you watch him?" I said, "What do you do if he moves?" He said, "You shoot him." Huh. And I said, "Boy, don't move." I really think, though, the next morning, I think he was dead. I didn't. Next morning, when the first sun came up, we pulled out. And I said, "Well, what about my prisoner?" I said, "Oh, leave him there. Somebody will come along and take care of him." So, so we pulled out. And that was kind of a... And there was dead Germans, dead horses, smell.
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of glad to get out of there.
Yeah.
That was the first night of real combat for me.
So you could recognize the sergeant just by touching his heel.
Yeah, well, I could. We told him who he was. We knew each other.
Uh-huh.
We were sleeping right alongside each other.
Uh-huh.
But when we got up, if somebody got up and moved, you want to know where he was.
Uh-huh.
I found his heel there. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I says, "Who is it?" And he told me, and you kind of want. You didn't want to shoot if you
right.
didn't know the area was clear.
Right.
And I didn't have to shoot anything because I was not in charge of the way they laid the fire down at night.
Mm-hmm.
When they'd open up these little light machine guns, they had their field of fire.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't move the guns because they didn't want to shoot the Americans on the other side of the road either.
Mm-hmm.
You had to stay back. So the field of fire was laid down at night, at dusk.
Uh-huh.
And then that's where anything happened.
Well, to go back, I just remembered a question I had. When you were wounded, how come they made a point to take away your rifle and your ammunition? Was there a reason for that?
Well, yes, it was on the front lines, and that's where it's going to be used.
Okay, so they just redistribute it to
somebody. Another reason was, if I'd went down that road and got on that Red Cross truck, they'd have taken it away and left it on the road somewhere.
Okay.
And they wouldn't put you on the Red Cross, where the Red Cross is. There's no guns and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd have taken, and just laid it along the road there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Here I was up there where somebody might, when you take a drop on the ground real quick, like a lot of times you can break the stock on your rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody come in and say, "Hey, I don't have a gun." Well, they'd say, "Well, there's one here,
mm-hmm.
and there's ammunition." And somebody would grab the ammunition anyhow, because
mm-hmm.
if you did shoot, you'd be always looking for more ammunition.
So did you shoot a lot?
A couple of times.
Uh-huh.
Basically, it was not my job. As a runner, you didn't expose yourself to fire because
mm-hmm.
your job was to go out and deliver the message and get back.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't start a small war yourself.
Right.
Even though you might have been real close to Germans and they were close to you, but they were doing the same thing we were doing. They were scouting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And their job wasn't to shoot either. Their job was to see what they could see and then get back again.
Mm-hmm.
We did a lot of spying on each other in that sense.
Okay. So whenever you went out and did that kind of spying, you had somebody else with you?
We usually always went in pairs.
Okay.
Yes. They never ever asked you to do anything by yourself. If it was dangerous, you go in pairs.
Did they send the same guy with you a lot?
That was up to you to pick your own
okay.
person.
Who'd yep. you pick?
Well, I can't think of it. He was a New York young lad. Him and I got along real good. Kickenbacker or something like that. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
It probably had a nickname for him.
Uh-huh.
We never really got to know first names.
Mm-hmm.
But his name was... Anyhow, we got to be real good friends, and we had to trust each other. We had to... And him and I, when he was in went to another platoon from the captain, when he had to go somewhere, he picked me, and I picked him. We just got to be buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And good buddies stay together.
Mm-hmm. Did he make it through the war?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He made it through the war. Yep, he made it through.
Good.
And it was Our clothing was another problem. If you stayed up there too long, it got pretty rancid because they didn't send up new uniforms for you all
Oh,
the time.
goodness.
So there was nothing in the seams there, pants legs and stuff. You'd have little white bugs and stuff, you know, you'd just clean them out. You were there, as long as you stayed here alive, that was the main thing.
So did you try to, like, wash up when you went
We
by a
got,
river
yeah,
anytime?
See, like I said, my job, we'd get the food out to the guys. If we got hot food, it was really morning. They'd bring it up in containers and carry containers, two men to a container. And otherwise, they'd bring up boxes of K-rations, little box, square boxes. The Army made a very good job of making sure you got three boxes a day. You might get them at 3 o'clock in the morning, but you were going to get three boxes if you couldn't get hot food to you. But if they get hot food to you, then that happened. So that meant the kitchens weren't too far behind you. You had to move them and bring them up and feed the men. It was quite a problem. And then know where the men were up there too. You know, they had to know how many men to feed and stuff.
It's a huge operation.
We never threw any pancakes away, I'll tell you that. They did a lot of pancakes and sausages and stuff.
Can you think of any other battlefield experiences that you want to talk about today, or would you rather think about it?
Going through Belgium and places like that, we were greeted by the people. Yeah, they were pretty nice.
Happy to see you.
No, I think that should probably
That's
do
good
today. Huh?
For today, okay.
This is the end of the first interview with Ray Kanin on August 24th, 2008.